An update on the Klamath Hydroelectric Settlement Agreement.
I'm going to get some more on Monroe.
Please. Yeah. No call in my car yet. I wonder what that means.
They're busy.
Probably means it blew up. Burned it to the ground. We'll just wait one moment, please.
Sure.
Yep. All right, Clayton, why don't you take us away?
Good afternoon, Chairman Noren and fellow board members. This, in your packet, the EOSR, it was itemized as the Interim Measure 10 Water Quality Workshop. We have been asked by members of our funding team, since it's become a more collaborative effort and funding has come from more sources than just the Klamath Hydroelectric Settlement Agreement. It's now more generally known as the Klamath River Water Quality Workshop, and it's a board update today just to apprise you of a key component of our TMDL implementation program. I am Clayton Krager, staff scientist here with the regional board and the implementation lead for the Klamath TMDL.
Thank you for that.
Okay, and today we'll be covering some elements of this workshop. It's connected to many other pieces of the implementation program and many other things that are going on. And so as far as a presentation overview, I'll be giving you an overview of the status of the secretarial determination process. We'll review some of the large-scale factors that are part of affecting water quality in the Klamath Basin and how this workshop speaks to those. We'll be reviewing some other Klamath TMDL implementation elements. I'll give you an overview of the workshop, and then we'll move on to some next steps. I wanted to briefly review here the geographic area that we're talking about here today. This is a map that you all have become very familiar with, and you'll be seeing a new map the next time I do this, but I didn't have it prepared in time for this presentation. But we're talking about primarily the workshop will be addressing the pollutant sources and areas of the upper basin, including the Lost River, the Sprague and the Williamson, the Wood, Upper Klamath Lake itself, Iwanakino, and Upper Klamath. So it's really those areas primarily within Oregon. Some of them are within California. But if you recall from the TMDL, these were the areas that contribute the largest pollutant load relative to nitrogen, phosphorus, and organic matter. I'll get this right yet. No, I won't. So as far as the Klamath Hydroelectric Settlement Agreement, it's also KHSA, and then the Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement, and then there's the corollary, the parallel process known as the secretarial determination, which is being conducted by the Department of Interior to determine whether it's in the public's best interest to remove the hydroelectric facilities on the Klamath River, and that includes J.C. Boyle, COPCO 1, COPCO 2, and Iron Gate Dam. Well, we had the State Board had a hearing on July 17th at which they were considering whether or not to continue the abeyance on the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission proceedings that would address the licensing of these facilities. In their determination, they decided to continue the abeyance and allow the KHSA to move forward. And this is largely based on a demonstration of good faith efforts on the part of the parties to continue to implement the Klamath Hydroelectric Settlement Agreement. So we will not hear a secretarial determination until there is a congressional hearing on the agreement, and so that determination is really pending congressional action. And so we were, the abeyance will give time for the parties to continue to try to get a subcommittee hearing on the part of the Natural Resources Committee in the House of Representatives on the agreement. So that's still pending, and the they're hoping for action by next spring. The EIS, EIR, and CEQA documents have been completed but not released as final because the clock starts ticking if they've released it as a final, and there's no sense in releasing them as a final until there is a secretarial determination and action, congressional action on these. So they're essentially complete. They've responded to public comments. The document expanded from 4,500 pages to 9,100 pages. I saw an email today in response to public comments. This has been a very thorough and comprehensive process. And so we'll be seeing action on that concurrent with these other the secretarial determination and then congressional hearings. The KHSA parties are discussing contingency plans relative to how to stimulate congressional action, changes that might have to be come about in the agreement if Congress requires some modifications of the agreement. So they're still very actively engaged with one another in this process. And so there is hope that remains for congressional hearings and action next spring. And as the Regional Board 1 representative at the State Board hearing, it was my recommendation, staff recommendation, that there had been good faith progress, and this workshop is a component of that good faith progress. So the importance of the workshop and the projects that we're considering in the workshop, I know these graphs that I took from this USGS document. What I wanted to illustrate is that the Klamath TMDL is a special challenge, especially in the upper basin, because we are dealing with legacy effects of large-scale land use disturbance activities. And by that I mean that in the past era, when logging was not as well managed as it is today, the largest sawmills ever in the world, still today, were in operation in the Klamath Basin, the upper Klamath Basin. And this is scale is millions of board feet from Klamath County and from the reservation. And you can see that in some years they were approaching a billion board feet of removal per year for many years in a row at a time when the logging practices were not what they were. What this resulted in is a large amount of nutrient-rich sediment being deposited in the upper Klamath Lake, of which the water quality effects are still being felt today. And so there's no ownership to that pollutant source within the lake. And what we are faced, the challenge we're faced with, is how do we address that pollutant load now that the watershed is not under the same amount of pressure it was in those days and not receiving as much sediment, but we still are feeling those effects. In addition to that, the lake watershed was also dramatically modified to accommodate agriculture through large-scale draining and diking of freshwater marshes and wetlands, and the following World War II and the Korean War, irrigated agriculture increased dramatically in the basin as a result of lands being granted to veterans through the Homestead Act. And that has two implications. It replaces a formerly nutrient-retaining land use with a nutrient-exporting land use. But those lands were granted to veterans. And so that activity, the use of that land for agriculture has special meaning to that area. And our approach to preserving and protecting and enhancing water quality in the area has to recognize that we're not going back to a landscape that was pre-European disturbance. You know, we're dealing with the landscape as it is, respecting the land uses that are currently present in the watershed. That is exemplified here by these maps that were put together by the Bureau of Reclamation that illustrate the loss of natural lake and marsh areas around Upper Klamath Lake. Approximately 60 to 75% of the natural lake and marsh area has been removed and replaced, you know, with agricultural lands. And so, and that is even more dramatic here for Lower Klamath Lake, where approximately 80 to 90% of the wetland and marsh area has been lost due to diking and draining and use as ag areas. So what we have to do is we have to replace a lot of ecosystem functions on a much smaller footprint. And thus, we're exploring those possibilities through the application of engineering techniques through this water quality workshop. So we have these water quality impacts. We have legacy pollutants. We have lost ecosystem functions. We have current pollutant sources. And we have temperature issues within the Klamath. So we have these program elements on the right that we're currently in the process of developing and implementing, and not all of them are related to the work that I'm doing. You can see that the Klamath Water Quality Workshop and water quality projects I have at the top, but that's because that's what I'm talking about today. But there are other elements at work here too, including the Klamath Tracking and Accounting Program, the development of our Ag Lands Program by Ben Zabinski and others, our timberlands program, which is developed and being implemented for both federal and private lands within the watershed, our watershed stewardship initiative, the protection of thermal refugia, which is kind of actually being implemented now through the moratorium on suction dredge mining through the Cal Fish and Game Permit Program. So that's something that we don't have to devote staff time to, but it's had a tremendous impact on the well-being of the on the protection of those thermal refugia. And then we have other programs at work as well, the roads program. So we're focusing today on these projects right here. So to get this underway, we received $100,000 from PacifiCorps. They were required to provide $100,000 for this workshop through the Klamath Hydroelectric Settlement Agreement. It was in our assessment it was going to require additional funding, so we did some outreach to the California Coastal Commission, and they agreed that because of the importance of the estuary and the salmonids, that it was a key to their mission, and they threw in another $100,000. In addition to that, the California Water Academy agreed to handle the logistics and travel, which is not insignificant, and totals somewhere around $40,000. So there's a commitment of $40,000 from the California Water Academy and a tremendous amount of staff support to me in helping to develop this workshop. We're going to hold the workshop in Sacramento on September 11th, 12th, and 13th at the Cal EPA building. And the reason why we had to have it there is it has a regional airport, because there are experts coming from around the country to attend this. In addition, we needed a large number of rooms because we're utilizing a small breakout sessions to more directly engage those who are in attendance. We are going to have a four-hour session evaluating proposed technology. There'll be 10 subgroups doing that simultaneously. There'll also be a four-hour session responding to an innovative sort of water quality request for proposal, hypothetical, but we're engaging the experts to tell us, if you had this amount of funding, how would you implement a water quality improvement program using these technologies in the upper basin? And then we have plenary sessions scheduled to help identify areas of consensus. Misspelled word there. So the workshop participants, we've had an overwhelming response. People are doing this. Essentially, very few people who are attending, you can see we have over 100, are getting their travel paid. We have over 100 invited now. We have 110 committed to coming. They were nominated by a 13-member steering committee to ensure diversity and representation across the board. We have academics, representatives from non-governmental organizations like the Nature Conservancy and others, the tribes, technical consultants because we want that practical experience there as well. Vendors of various pollution control technologies, technical members of agencies. We have a lot of technical expertise, among others. PacifiCorp will be in attendance as well. So we're also looking at past experience with large-scale rehabilitation projects to learn from what has been done around the country. This is a very large system, several hundred thousand acres that we're looking at affecting a change over. So Everglades, Chesapeake Bay, Salton Sea, and the Mississippi Gulf of Mexico Anoxia project. The workshop we originally is envisioned, it was going to be try to pull together both decision makers, policy people, and technical people. The steering committee made a decision that to keep the workshop largely technical with the idea of doing later follow-up focus groups with policymakers with the product that we were able to develop at the workshop. So what we've done is to more directly engage, we consulted with NOAA about how to most effectively use the time of these 100 technical experts. And they looked at our original agenda and they said, so you're flying these people from all over the country so you can talk at them for 2 days. And that caused us to reassess our workshop agenda and rely more on the issuance of a pre-workshop report that provides them with the information they need to effectively engage in the task that we are going to pose to them at the workshop. So the pre-workshop report, which is available to the public, is an excellent condensation of the environmental setting, the technology options we'll be evaluating, and the criteria that we'll be using at the workshop. The technologies we'll be evaluating at the workshop will include wetland restoration and treatment wetlands, and there is a continuum between those. No wetland restoration is not unengineered, and it's not completely natural. So there's a continuum between wetland restoration and treatment wetlands. And then the diffuse source treatment systems is an approach that's being pioneered in the upper Midwest, which is sort of decentralized treatment wetlands being applied to almost as a regular agricultural technique within agricultural fields. So that will be assessed as well, and we have some experts from the upper Midwest coming to speak to that. The algal biomass removal is the attempt to retrofit some of the innovations in stormwater technology. The part of the problem within Keno Reservoir and Upper Klamath Lake is the incredibly severe and dense algal blooms. And we'd like to look at the possibility of using retrofit stormwater filtration technology to actually extract that from the water column, which would have two water quality benefits. It would reduce the amount of organic matter that chews up dissolved oxygen as it's decomposing, and it would remove nutrients from the water column, essentially using the algal cells as nutrient pumps. And we've invited people from NASA that have been researching the use of algal matter as biofuels and biogas to help. And it will never make money, but it can help offset the program costs. So we're trying to cover that part. The sediment sequestration, water column oxidation, and sediment removal, those technologies deal more directly with the legacy pollutants that I mentioned that are within the sediments. So the next steps for this from the workshop, it's really a part of our implementation program. It will provide us with a final project report, which will be a conceptual design. And by that, I mean it's a 20 to 30% design document, not ready for shovel. It's not shovel ready, but it will be a public resource. And what that will do is allow any entity to pick that up and pursue funding for further development, further engineering feasibility design on any of the projects that are come out of the workshop with a favorable recommendation. The way that feeds into the other part of our Klamath TMDL implementation program is that none of these projects will be able to be funded by a single entity, whether it's a government organization or a private entity. And that's where the Klamath Tracking and Accounting Program comes into play by providing a mechanism where various entities that are interested in improved water quality in the upper basin can consolidate their funding to tackle these larger projects. So it's it may look like a lot of different pieces, but we're trying to keep the pieces moving together, and we're trying to prepare for the future by providing that mechanism so that we can actually do something with this design once we have it in place. With that, I'll take any questions that you may have.
Thank you very much, Clayton. Pretty amazing that you're in the middle of this whole darn thing and that you're the guy.
Well, it's a large team.
Well, I mean, I imagine it is. But at the same time, you came and talked to us a while back about some of this stuff and what you were doing up here. It's really nice. I mean, that's a huge move forward on the big-time implementation and with a capital I up there. I mean, to look at the scale, what you're talking about, even think about that is daunting. And yet you've got you and this team have put together this workshop that conceptualizes maybe how this could happen.
Well, I think I was pretty honest when I first mentioned our implementation program is pursuing these loads in Oregon as being high risk, high reward. But I think as we get more engaged in these types of projects, I'm starting to reassess the high risk part of that. I mean, there's certainly technical challenges, but we have a lot of partners that have common interest in helping to address those water quality issues up there. And I think people are starting to see the benefit of working together on that. So,
quick question. I noticed your map included the whole watershed. You don't have to go back for the map, by the way, but the map showed the whole watershed. And I know this is Upper Basin, but does this involve at all some of the TRIBs and that we have TMDL on them as well? Because I couldn't help but notice your list of TMDL implementation didn't include the TMDL implementation of the TRIBs, which I know is there. But I mean, is this primarily, this is basically from the last dam up kind of thing?
This particular project is.
Okay.
You'll notice I mentioned stewardship, and our very first Klamath Basin Monitoring Program watershed stewardship approach, which includes the development of the monitoring plan for the Shasta TMDL. We're working very closely with the Shasta RCD as our first reach monitoring lead to develop the monitoring plan in conjunction with an adaptive management watershed stewardship approach, which is we'll make use of the Klamath Tracking and Accounting Program and is based on the existing waiver and is consistent with all of these other components that we're trying to work on. The temperature piece, you know, is key for the tributaries. We're trying to treat it as a whole system.
Well, and I got to be explicit. One of my goals is to drag some of your stuff down into these TRIBs because I think it's really important to connect it hydrologically as one unit, as it truly is.
Well, we're a little bit ahead in the Klamath because we had a 319 grant that was awarded to the Klamath Watershed Partnership to work in conjunction with the Klamath Tracking and Accounting Program. But the watershed stewardship approach is explicitly meant to take those lessons learned from the Klamath Watershed Partnership in the Sprague and Williamson and transfer them to the Shasta.
John?
One is, I don't see the whole list, but you better have included all the major parties or you're going to blow it up. And is the reason you didn't invite more just because of room or?
Yes.
Because I think that's a very, very sensitive issue. So I just hope that's been done. There have been substantial budget increases. I'm a little bit concerned on mission creep out of nutrients. And I actually don't want the Scott and Shasta involved. I want it really dealing with the nutrient problems in the basically the upper basin. And I have sediment, of course, not unrelated to that, but it's could be another whole topic, and I really hope that this is a one-time through funding source that we get the job done on getting a vision or request for projects, and I like tying it to getting budget items down the line for various governments and various programs, but I think that's going to be critical, and if we lose that out of this conference, then it'll be a very sad thing.
The first part of your question was invitees, and the invitee responsibilities were assigned to our 13-member steering committee, which included a pretty broad spectrum. We include representatives for the operators on the ground, like the NRCS and local conservation districts, as well as the local nonprofits like the Klamath Rangeland Trust, and their membership and board members will be in attendance. So we've, and the tribes, of course, and so we've tried.
Project, I assume the project has a representative.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. The Bureau is part of the steering committee, so they made their selections as well. When I veered over into Shasta and Scott, those were other components of the Klamath team. We have a Klamath TMDL implementation yes. program that goes far beyond this workshop. And I was just mentioning that we're going to ensure that the lessons learned from both the Klamath tracking and accounting program and this workshop are then utilized in other sub-basins, and we're doing that through that watershed stewardship program approach. So it's systematically rotating through the entire basin that way, of which the main stem sub-basins will be included as well.
Any other comments, questions? I don't have any speaker cards on this. Can I make a request, though? Clayton, can you, through maybe Patty, disseminate the website for the document that you referred to? I'm just curious about it.
Yeah, I should have included that.
No, it's okay.
Yeah.
If you could just, as a follow-up to this, do that.
Right.
Well, thank you very much, Clayton. Yeah. Let's take a 10-minute break. We'll come back at 1:05, and we'll take on the next item. Are you ready?